Welcome to Cloud Radio, made for full-stack cloud operators. Cloud Radio covers all aspects of the business of software.
Well, I'm happy to have Sally Duby from The Bridge Group. I've been truly a long-time fan of their research. I've been reading it for over a decade. Just incredible benchmarks in the sales universe for software. And they recently published one of their authoritative reports. And I'm happy to have Sally Duby here to go through that report and then some Q&A around sales in general.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Matt. It's great to be here. I love talking about this stuff.
So could you give the audience a little bit more about yourself and your firm?
Sure. So I have been in tech sales and leading sales teams, SDR teams for, well, I'll just say over 30 years. It's been a while. I got my start at Oracle back when Oracle was a $50 million company. I was there for 4 years and experienced growth from 50 million to a billion. So it was quite the crazy times. I've learned an awful lot about what to do in building pipeline and running sales teams, and an awful lot about what not to do as well during those times. But went on and built and optimized a bunch of different other sales and SDR and renewal teams over the years, as well as worked with two consulting firms in helping B2B tech companies, you know, figure out how to get that holy grail of repeatable, scalable models. And the Bridge Group has been around since the late 90s, helping B2B tech companies do that very thing as well. And since 2007, we have been doing these benchmark reports. So we have a long history. We've worked with over 500 companies in this area in building, optimizing, doing playbooks, fractional management, coaching, advisory services, training services for B2B tech companies. So we get our hands dirty. We know what is going on in the current economic climate and situation because of the work that we do, as well as our surveys that we do.
Well, perfect. I think maybe we'll just get right into the report. And for the folks watching, you'll see the slides. For the folks listening, we will have these slides in the show notes, and they're pretty self-explanatory. And so we're going to get going right now.
Awesome. So if we go to, we're just going to go and dive right in, as Matt said, give you a little bit of background about who participated in this survey. It was about 170 executives from all sorts of SaaS companies. Most of them were headquartered in North America. We had median annual revenues of $24 million, but you see the range. It was, you know, all the way from under $5 million to a bunch over $500 million in revenues. So again, a wide range in revenues, as well as the median annual contract value, ACV, is what we call it, throughout the survey. So we had a big representation across all the categories from under 5,000 in ACV to over 250,000 in ACV. So again, pretty broad representation across the board. This is the first time we did this about the target buyers, because we get asked this question a bunch, but we did have a fairly good representation across who each company was targeting as their buyers. Of course, it was heavy in the IT operations space, but as you can see, it was all across the board from, you know, line of business and marketing and sales and owners and HR to, again, the more technical with security, InfoSec, you know, DevOps, finance and legal. So again, a good representation across the board on who the buyers were that the companies were selling to. This can be a little bit, some of these charts a little bit tough to understand, but it just goes through and tells you about by target buyer and by ACV, how many of the companies were represented. So you can see we had a high representation in the 25 to 50K ACV in IT operations and also in the marketing category, as well as we had high representation in the 100,000 to 250K ACV in the IT space, but kind of crossed, again, all segments. So now we're going to talk about some of the actual data. And I think this was an interesting one on the marketing contribution by revenue. The median share of AE pipeline sourced by marketing rose drastically last year. It rose from 21% to now 33%, or it rose by 21%. So from 33% to now 40%, which I find really interesting because as an anecdotal data point, I talk to sales and marketing leaders every day for the Bridge Group. I'm our chief sales officer, and those are my target markets. And most companies I talk to over the last 1.5 years has said there was a significant decrease in MQLs. So the fact that now companies are relying much heavier on marketing to provide pipeline, but yet MQLs have significantly decreased, is pretty concerning. I think that that is something that we have to start paying attention to and figure out why and what is going on there.
For sure. And so from the sounds of it, the math would suggest that that's really a function of leads generated by SDRs and AEs going down more than marketing MQLs have declined.
Well, I think that is definitely correct, especially to the point that, you know, there were a lot of layoffs over the last year and a half. A lot of SDR teams were targeted and hit. Some SDR teams were wiped out in their total. Others took big hits. And now, you know, instead of supporting one SDR, supporting 2 to 3 AEs, they may be supporting 6 to 10 AEs. So there weren't a whole lot of AEs around that could do a lot of pipeline generation. And I think that that had a big impact in that. And so as we look at marketing contribution by average contract value, I think this is one of the things that, you know, has held true for many years. Since I think 2007, we've been doing this report, but marketing contribution as ACV rises decreases significantly. Marketing has a much larger contribution in the small deal size, in the under 25K average contract value, and even higher in the under $5,000. But as you start getting up to the $100,000 average deal sizes and $250,000, marketing contribution typically decreases a lot. I mean, it's still lower now this year, but it increased a lot. And I think that goes back to, I kind of question how many people in the last year still had a lot of big deal sizes, because we know a lot of companies, you know, the last year and a half has been a really tough year, obviously, for SaaS companies, for sales. You know, we're going to talk a lot more about win rates decreased, average deal sizes decreased for many companies. And we had a lot of companies that we talked to and some VC firms that were really recommending, stop trying to go for a $100,000 deal. Stop trying to go for that $150,000 deal. Go for a $30,000 deal, a $50,000 deal. Get them committed, get them successful, and then work on an upsell after that. But it was a lot easier over the last year and a half to get a 25K deal than it was those 100, 250K deals, which may be why, you know, marketing contributions also rose, because maybe those 250K deals aren't really 250K deals anymore or in the
Makes
last
sense.
Year. So if we move on and look at, which is a hot topic now, outbound sales development support. So much about, you know, is outbound dead? And some people, I think, with certain agendas on LinkedIn are saying, yes, it's dead. No, it's not dead. It is tough. There are companies struggling. There's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of companies are doing it wrong and not giving the proper support to their teams. But as we see, even though outbound sales development, we saw that drop from 80-some percent to 74% of AEs being supported by outbound sales development teams. It dropped, but it's still significant to have 74% of AE teams supported by SDRs is still a large percentage, you know, of AE teams being supported by SDR teams. We are seeing that it is getting tougher for outbound SDR teams to make the economics work in this environment if you're really under $5,000 of ACV. So
that makes perfect sense. And we'll get into some of the Q&A on SDRs and AE relationships after the slides.
Okay. I can't wait. I love this. So here's where, if you take a look at, you know, pipeline sources by ACV, again, as you see, as the ACV rises, so does outbound SDR support. You know, at that 100K plus ACV, you do see that outbound SDRs are heavily supported. You know, you've got 25% of pipeline is coming from outbound SDRs. It is interesting to see that AE self-generated rose. It's typically between what we've seen over the last 10, 15 years is that AE generated pipeline was in the 20-25% range, pretty universally across the board. To see it go up to closer 30% in those larger deals is a little bit surprising, but may make sense in that they may have established relationships there. And by all means, they should take advantage of those and use those. But you still see that, you know, outbound SDRs are a huge piece of that, as well as the channel. You see the channel really picking up as you get into the larger deal sizes, which is really different and new because for so long, many companies or the prevailing thought was that you couldn't get a lot of channel in SaaS companies. And now we're seeing there is more channel play with SaaS companies and they are contributing to more pipeline.
For sure. And we just had a cast with Guy Rubin from EBSTA, and it was pretty, the partner channel, which very synonymous with channel, I'm sure in your definition, you know, was arguably the best converting source of pipeline last year.
Yes. I have heard that from several companies. Yes. It was a big, big opportunity for them. So we're going to jump into renewals. We did see some real changes since our 2022 report over the last year and a half in that the return of the account management role was huge. And it was really big in renewals and upsell versus an AE and a CSM combination. And I think a lot of that is because the account management role is still more closely thought of as a sales role. Versus the CSM role is typically not made up of people with a sales background, a heavy sales background, right? So I think when you get into tough situations, you need more of that sales background.
And since a substantial portion of the audience here are not like direct operators, and in many ways don't even buy all that much software themselves, right? And have a lot of vendor relationships, like what would you characterize as an account manager? And then how would you characterize a customer success manager?
Okay. So an account manager is someone who owns the existing install base, accounts only, no net new business, except for they own the, you know, and again, this kind of varies between the three functions that they own. They may own renewals, but they most likely own upsell and cross-sell within that account base. So some of that cross-sell is sort of like net new business. You know, it's a different division, right, within a company. So depending on the size of that account, if you're talking about, you know, a $50 billion account and you're the account manager going into a new division, you know, they have no idea what other divisions are doing when you're talking about that size. So it is almost like a net new sale. So you're really looking at in the profile of the people in the account management role are much more sales reps, right? They've been in sales, they're used to carrying a quota, as opposed to the CSM role. Their backgrounds are typically not sales. They may be coming from the operation side, the support side of things. And the CSM, there are different roles within the CSM as well. Some do own renewals and upsells and expansion, or maybe they own the capability to find those opportunities and turn them over to a sales rep. They don't sell them themselves. They may also be responsible for adoption and, you know, the success of the customer, as well as technical support. So they may have more of a technical background as well, but typically not a sales focused background.
Perfect. Perfect.
So that's I think where we saw a real switch, getting more, again, that sales background into a lot of the roles that for the renewals and the upsell. Especially, you know, I think where it makes sense is if you're looking at taking smaller deals when the economy is tough, like what we've been going through, but you know there's a large opportunity there, is that you don't want to hand it off to somebody that doesn't have that sales skill and DNA in them. So if you've got an account manager that is used to selling and can work that opportunity to grow it, makes a lot more sense.
That really does. Like, you have a handful of valuable leads or expansion opportunities, and now you really need to be careful with who gets those.
Exactly. Exactly. And they can stay involved a lot more. I mean, it gets tough if you keep your AE involved, because now they get so involved in that expansion opportunity that bringing in net new logos can suffer. And while, you know, customers and net dollar retention is critical for SaaS companies, if you're not feeding that machine with net new logos to be able to get NRR, you've got some problems going on.
I 110% agree.
So again, this is just another comparison from 2 years ago to this, is who responsible was upsell, cross-sell. And again, just it just points out that the account management role really came in and took over those, a lot of those responsibilities. And we saw the contraction of the CSM role in those responsibilities. Again, this is just, and a lot of this, it's just driven because of the economy. I fully believe we'll see a lot of this stuff change back to what it was when companies are buying more freely. Okay. So now we're going to talk a little bit again about, you know, having all three functions supporting a customer, which can get pretty expensive and may, you know, cause some issues with your CAC. So you have to be really careful where you get SDRs plus AEs plus account managers and CSM supporting that role. So, you know, I think that you're going to start seeing that come more into play again with the larger ACVs, right? So you see that the number rises when you look at companies that are above 5 million in revenues. Then you can start, you see that about 68% of them support, have that support of three people or four people. But under the 5 million in revenue, they can't afford it. And also the ACV really impacts that as well. And companies above 50 million in revenue are about 1.6 times more likely to have three roles that specialize in, you know, one for land, one to engage, and one to expand, which again, it makes sense. Talking a little bit about the tech stack, I know everybody likes to focus in tech on tech. And we saw a real consolidation happen because of costs, or, you know, lack of revenue being generated, and then the cost for tech. tech spending was a little bit running rampant and people weren't really seeing the results and they weren't implemented properly. So we saw many companies go from having a CRM plus four additional core tools, as we called them, down to a CRM and three tools. And, you know, sort of table stakes were outside of the CRM were LinkedIn Sales Navigator, a sales engagement platform like Outreach, Sales Viewer, Sales Loft, call recording, and maybe a CPQ for quoting, pricing, or some kind of learning platform for onboarding and training. Those were some of the key ones. And as one would suspect, larger companies above 100 million in revenues deploy more tech than companies under 20 million in revenues. Makes sense, right? Okay, so let's go and talk about ramp and retention. So one of the things that we do see changing a lot is remote and hybrid. There was a decrease in hybrid AE teams from 2 years ago, along with an increase in fully remote teams, right? So this was for sales. We still see some people that are kind of trying to play around. We do see a lot of leaders that really like to have people in office, but still struggling with that. People have gotten used to the fully remote and are really leaning into that and wanting to stay with that.
And when Bridge Group works with clients, do you guys advocate for a particular structure?
A lot of that depends on the size of the company as well and what they're selling and what they know and the type of people that they can afford to bring in. If it's a small Series A company and you're looking at selling an under $5,000 ACV, and so you're looking at bringing in probably less experienced AEs, there's definitely something to be said to having them all in the office and understanding what is going on and what's working and what's not working and coaching them properly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about the centralized hybrid and remote by revenues. So as you can see, though, it was, you know, as you get larger in revenue, you see, you know, that there is almost, you know, it's kind of equally along the different things between hybrid, fully remote, and local to an office. They've really split it out. And that's because they probably have a lot more offices as well around the country. So there are some reasons, I think, for that. But a lot of the other companies are really fully embracing the hybrid or fully remote. Okay, let's get into experience required at hire. So as one could imagine, because of all the layoffs, there's a lot of people that are looking for jobs, which means there's a lot more experienced reps also available and on the bench. And so the average experience prior to hiring has really increased a lot. It now is 3.6 years of average experience from, you know, it was a little bit under 3 years before. So that is rising a lot. We have a lot more talent available that has more experience. So I think that that, you know, all makes sense. And as you look at the higher average contract value sizes, you're also going to see that that raises as well as we get into this next slide. So when you start looking at, you know, 50K and above, you can see that you're looking for a lot higher experience level. Again, we all understand it makes perfect sense. I don't know that there's anything surprising about that. We do see a trend, again, required experience in excess of 3 years drastically rose from 2 years ago. It dropped off in 2022. If you guys remember 2021, 2022, you know, we had the Great Resignation. We had mass amounts. We have great business opportunities going on. And it was growth at all costs again. And people were hiring mass amounts And we couldn't find enough experienced people. And so it really dropped down of the experience level. And now we've got a totally different situation and story. And so it's risen back up, but it's risen back up higher than even when it was during pandemic.
And when you talk about experience, does that include time as an SDR or is it experience in an AE role?
It's experience as an AE. Yes.
Got it. Got it.
So ramp time. This is kind of an interesting one in that companies are hiring more experienced AEs, but yet ramp time has increased. So you kind of wouldn't expect that maybe, but I think it's part of it is tied back to a decrease in SDRs and relying on marketing for a pipeline, and MQLs have decreased a lot. So AEs had to spend a lot more time to develop their own pipeline, which means it's going to take them longer to become fully ramped to quota. And we defined ramp time as, we asked the question, how long does it take for a new AE to ramp up to full productivity or meaning quota? So I think you've got a couple of things at play, which the average ramp time is sitting at 5.7 months, which is a big increase since even just 4 years ago, which was 4.3 months. So we're seeing it's taking longer to get reps ramped up and understanding. And maybe that's because we're not properly enabling them and training them as well. I would look at that. I think we spend so much time as tech companies training new hires all about us and about our products, and not about what our buyers want and need and what their challenges are. And if we flip that, maybe we could increase ramp time or decrease ramp time, I mean to say, a little bit. So again, we talked a little bit about this, is that ramp time in excess of 5 months has drastically increased from 2022. And again, a lot of it does go back to the economic times. You know, it's tougher to sell. It's a tougher environment to sell at.
Yeah. I found this chart fascinating. And for the people listening, it goes all the way back to 2012. And it shows the ramp time in excess of 5 months in 2012 was 17%. Through 2020, it rose to 48%. 2024, up to 63%. And I looked at this as incredibly high signal about the industry maturing, the degree of competition. Right, is that if you're truly in this fast cycle, tons of unmet demand, you can plug in a new person and they just tap into the existing demand. But as the industry evolves and gets more crowded, right, the AE needs to self-generate the lead or work the leads longer to get up the curve and to differentiate their company too. It's one thing when you're the only e-signature player or what have you. And now in 2024, where there's 12, right? And you need to, you know, break through and differentiate and close that deal. And that inherently takes longer. And so I looked at this graph as incredibly high signal. And one of the benefits of what Bridge Group does, right? And why these reports are so good is they have a data set from 12 years ago. Right. And it's not just a data point in isolation. It can really frame, you know, what's happening in sales.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's a great point. And again, my gut tells me, though, when I look at a lot of this, is that if we look at what's happening in the economy and when people were just buying, you know, freewheeling buying,
yep,
is that this will go down again.
True, true.
But it is tougher to sell and there are so much more competitors. I mean, if you just take the security market, oh my gosh, the competition in trying to differentiate yourself in the security market, because there's so many different specialties and it's hard to understand as a buyer what you need and what category is going to fit. But yet there's so many options and everybody's saying the same thing. So it gets very tough. Okay, let's talk about tenure. I think this is another one that is not surprising. Due to the tough hiring market, the average tenure rose from 2.8 years, or rose to 2.8 years from 2.2 years, right? So as the market gets tougher, and I think this goes into, we talk a little bit more about this here, but as the market, you know, gets tougher for hiring, people are going to stay, you know, and there's not as much competition calling up your reps and offering them the sky and the moon at the same time and having them jump ship. So people are staying put. But we looked at, you know, productivity, which how we define productivity was how many months was a rep at full productivity. So that was their tenure minus the ramp period. And that actually, the median time at productivity increased substantially. It went to 24 months. And again, really the reason why is because people stayed put much longer in their jobs. So the companies were able to get, you know, after ramp, people were staying longer. So they were able to get the benefit of that fully productive rep. They weren't jumping ship quickly. So when you start thinking about all the details as to what goes into that, it again all makes perfect sense. Again, talking about the attrition, again, no surprise here, more people were laid off, which accounts for the increase in the involuntary attrition. And because there wasn't a lot of hiring going on, the AEs, again, as we talked about, were staying in their roles. They weren't being lured away with outrageous offers. And so the voluntary was way lower. So this was by since 2015, this was the lowest voluntary or quit rate in the last 7-8 years.
That's a great data point.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I mean, you know, we got to think about what time and place we're at, and it all makes sense. We're going to dive a little bit into metrics and quotas now. We're looking at daily activities of an AE. And there was actually very little change here from 2 years ago. 2 years ago, it was a total of 64 activities a day. This was of everything, whether it was working on deals in the middle of the pipeline, prospecting, or closing. This is the number of activities. And I'm sure this, though, is impacted. We didn't look at this by average deal size, but I think that would be interesting. I'll see if I can get some data sliced and diced on that. But as you see, you know, and again, nothing has really changed between the breakup of between phone, email, LinkedIn, and other. Not much has changed there over the last 2 years. Okay, so now we're going to talk about quotas, which I think this is pretty fascinating here. On quotas, quotas average now $800,000, which is about 8% higher than 2 years ago, which I find fascinating that we're raising quotas at a time when less reps are making quota.
Yeah. And for the people listening, they have this great slide that segments it by ACV, and all the way down, in every ACV cohort, quota rose, and relatively substantially. Once you look above 50, just eyeballing it, probably averages out to like low double digits.
Yeah. You get up to 250K ACV, the quota increased 19.5%, which I find fascinating. So I'm not sure. But, you know, again, I think for those that have been involved in assigning quotas and understanding how quotas get assigned in companies, there's a huge room for improvement in there. It's not done with any rhyme or reason or reality check. And I think this is a perfect example of how poorly setting quotas is done in most companies.
And for the non-practitioners like myself, like some of this quota setting might be like back solving, right? Like we have this plan, we have this compensation budget of some form, and we're going to just therefore select kind of an arbitrary quota. that yes. meets those equations.
Yes. They're all arbitrary. And it's driven by something other than realistic capabilities and market conditions. So, which again, it's fascinating to me, but.
And then a follow on to that, because it's something I've theorized at times, would be that some of this quota was a compensation driven, right? As OTE rises, right? Like there's been an underlying trend, and then that causes, that itself forces the quota ceiling up.
Yes. Does
that sound reasonable?
Well, it does. It does to a degree. That is part of it. That's not all of it. But then if you look at, if you want to deal in the real world, you've risen quotas, comp has risen, but the number of people achieving quota is significantly down. And we're getting into that. So, you know, you've actually made the problem a lot worse than better by doing this. So we're going to get into some other good stuff here. Sales cycle. This is one of the ones I alluded to that, it was a very tough market. Average deal sizes were down. Sales cycles increased tremendously. Sales cycles rose across all levels of ACV and is now up to a median of 5 months. And so you look at $250,000 deals, average a 9-month sales cycle. I bet it was way longer than that in reality. So, you know, this is the tough environment that we're dealing in, but yet we decided to raise quota significantly. Makes sense to me, huh?
For sure. It seems like we have a theme here in this episode.
Yes. Okay. Now, this is the one that I think is really, again, interesting is win rates, is that we found win rates substantially decreased. They went from a 23% win rate to 19%. That may not sound like a lot, but when you look at what you need to achieve and to make up for that, typically companies are looking at, 3 to 4 times pipeline to quota that you need to have. Well, now that it's dropped down to 19%, now you need 5 to 6 times pipeline to make quota. And again, let's think about that. We've lost SDRs. Marketing MQLs have dropped significantly. You are putting more pressure on your AEs to do it all and to become that full cycle AE. Most AEs, quite frankly, don't know how to prospect properly. They give up after 2 or 3 tries and say, well, that company wasn't interested. And then they get a few deals in their pipeline and they stop prospecting. So you may be okay short term, but once those work through the sales cycle, let's see what happens in 4 to 5 months when those deals have worked through the sales cycle and the AE has nothing in the pipeline to work on. This is the whole reason why SDRs came around to begin with. So, I think that this is a dramatic shift that people have totally underestimated what it is going to take to offset this decrease in win rates and increase in sales cycles. So something to keep an eye on. Okay, quota attainment. I alluded to this and talked about it. This was historic. What we've seen happen here since we've been doing these again since 2007, we have on average, it has always been between 68 and 70% of reps in a sales team made quota. Again, some of the reasons that it's only 68 to 70% is because of the way we set quotas. We have no idea what we're doing setting quotas, but this was historic. I have never seen it drop this low to on average 51% of reps in a sales team made quota. That is horrendous. But yet again, we raise quotas. Not a whole lot of it. I guess I'm too rational of a person, but there's just a side of me that just says this just doesn't make any sense. and we're setting ourselves up for failure. I don't know. What do you think? Does any of this make any sense to you?
You know, to turn this more into discussion part, you could theorize, right, that some type of the philosophy or relationship has shifted, right? That we've had some shift, that management, for whatever reason, is more accepting of, look, we're only going to have 50% of our team hit quota, right? That 70% just is out the door for whatever reason. We don't mind, you know, there's cultural issues, there's, you know, financial issues, because we can set high quotas and a certain proportion of reps or deals, right? We've seen this in some of the infrastructure companies publicly traded, right? Where you'll see 20%, 22% of the reps are hitting quota, but these outlier land and expand or Fortune 100 type deals, you know, with these usage-based models and everything, that you could have these real outliers that cover up a lot of these issues. And then in this EBSTA report we just covered, I think the stat was the 17% of reps drive 81% of revenue, and that on a like all-in productivity basis of like sales cycle, close rates, everything, the top reps were 9 times as productive. And that used to be 6, and a few years before was 4, right? And so that's the only way some of this stuff still kind of works, right? Like we've seen the rep view charts, we've seen your charts with the quota going down, and things have been tough. And it seems like you can kind of get by with some outliers. And again, as you said, there's lots of moving parts. And if you set a bad quota, you're going to have these results, right? If you just set something that's unrealistic, of course, you're going to have 50% of the team miss. So those are my kind of viewpoints on it.
Well, that is great to hear. I don't know how sustainable and how you can count on some of that long term. But I also think now we're paying reps more money, and a lot less of them are hitting quota. So it's costing us more money.
Yeah. And I just had the opportunity to speak at an investment firm's conference. And I looked at it as the reps are really at the tip of the spear, right? And a lot of the challenges in the industry get borne by them, right? Like some shifts that you might see in marketing source pipeline or in competition or sales cycles or whatever. All of this is most evident at the AE level, right? Like they're in the marketplace, the longer sales cycle, the competition, right? They're the ones who are impacted by it, and less of the organization is as visible, and then financially as well, right? Like for the reps, right, their compensation dramatically decreases in ways you just functionally will not see in marketing or product.
Right, right. That's true.
And that, you know, to the extent, you know, SaaS has gotten harder, you know, they're the best way to observe it, is my viewpoint.
Yeah.
And that's why I love your content, right? Like I look at the ramp and the quota attainment as this beautiful signal to things changing in ways you really can't measure with things like MQLs, or there's just not as good of data. But then you look at this and it tells you a lot.
Yes.
So I'm pontificating at this point, interrupting the slides.
No. You know, I think the other thing to share is that we found that respondents with less than 50% of their reps making quota was the largest that we have ever seen since we've done this survey. Have never seen it this large. And so again, just some points that people need to start in leadership, need to start thinking about.
And one comment from kind of our vantage point in the quadrants we produce here at Cloud Ratings is we will cross-reference some quota attainment just to see how our quadrants line up. And what we found is it's the earliest stage companies are the ones that can really have those 20-30% quota rates where they forecasted a really, you know, sharply rising demand, or they overhired or just misset the quotas particularly poorly, right? And they'll have the outlier downside ones. And that the more mature companies, when we cross-reference to RepView, they really are the sales machines, and they're consistently 10-15% ahead of their peers or the earlier companies.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there are definitely those smaller end companies that were hit hard, right, with this, and a lot of them didn't get funding and are out of business as well. But just to show, I mean, how drastic this was from 2012 and, you know, where the quota attainment over time has gone and the sharp drop off, how it was really steady. And 2012, I think we were just coming out of the 2008 mortgage banking finance meltdown, and it was up because I think so many teams had been trimmed and scaled back as well. But it typically was in that 66 to 68% range. Okay, let's keep moving. So we're going to talk about comp. And, you know, we did see the compensation rise again. Base 100K with a variable about 90 was the median. And this was record highs since we've been doing the survey. So things are not getting cheaper, as we know. This is just a little bit about cost of living and OTEs. Nothing really there. Six figures over time on OTE. So there was so much more. Again, you can see how drastically over the last few years comp has risen and how many people are paying above the rates. I mean, look at the rates above $250,000 OTE have risen, you know, 31%. Crazy.
It really is striking. And I guess, you know, some of that might be greater experience. Some of that might be, you know, larger deals, right? It has to play into that, you know, people are selling 2 million of ACV or ARR a year, right? Are really, really the drivers of that. And some of these infrastructure and consumption-based models and just like, you know, Fortune 100 type deals, you know, you can have some real outliers.
Yes. Which this chart does show as you get up in the higher ACVs, you know, the amount that you're getting paid is a lot larger. So really starting at about 50K to 100K ACV is where you start seeing a breakout where you're going to get, you know, 249,000 OTE. You get up to the 250,000 and above ACVs, that's 300K OTE. So it really is by ACV. And if you're under 5K, you know, you're making well under the 190 average, you're making 148. So as an AE, if you really want to grow your earnings, you need to move up into selling a higher average deal. And that'll help you out tremendously. Quota via OTE ratio. There's a lot of, I would say this is probably something that more maybe the finance people or definitely the VC and PE firms, especially for smaller companies, really look at. And they really like to have things at a 4 to 6 times quota to your OTE rate. So as you can see, we are at about 4.2 times today, quota to OTE ratio, which is, I think, fairly reasonable and acceptable. Except that so many people aren't making quota. So, you know, when you only got half of your team making quota, it kind of throws this ratio out of whack in reality.
Yeah, that's a good, very good point.
Yeah. Okay. So commission rates, you know, commission rates are really a function of your comp plan and your quotas. But We have found that now the median commission rate is up to 11.5% of your average contract value. It really used to be more in the 9 to 10% range. So that is rising as well. And that's, again, probably accounts for a lot of the higher OTEs we're seeing on the incentive side.
And that was a surprise. And on, I believe, the next slide, you have it over history even. And it's, you know, risen fairly steadily.
Yes.
And I guess for the most recent period where we're talking about, you know, more challenged times, that really does, and, you know, people lower attrition and all of these factors. Any commentary on, like, why commission rates would rise?
You know, I think the commission rates are rising is just as it's a function of OTE rising as well, right? And so to get the OTE up there, the commission rates are rising, although the quotas have risen too. So other than that, I don't know why, other than, again, the increase in the OTE.
So another way to look at it seems like sales is very prone to back solving. Right, we back solve the quota, we back solve the commissions, right? And we end up with some surprising, you know, it is a machine. And then sometimes when we examine the parts, they have some, you know, unusual features on them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we don't, yes. We complicate things, I think, and make issues in other areas. So this is just about the leadership compensation. And as you can see, whether you're a manager, director, or VP, comp for you rose as well over time. And it's, you know, it's a good increase, but.
Well, awesome. I think we're at the end of the presentation.
We are.
And I know it has some information. Well, let's put up the slides with your information, but then we're going to get into some, here's a slide with.
How you can reach me. Feel free to reach out. I am happy to discuss anything, brainstorm with you, share trends, what we see working in other companies. We've worked with over 500 B2B tech companies, so we see just about every iteration of things.
And that's a great jumping off point. Like, what are the most common problems Bridge Group works on with your clients?
Yeah, so I would say they're in two buckets right now. The first one definitely being around pipeline and building pipeline, whether it's SDRs or AEs, but being able to build enough pipeline in a repeatable, scalable fashion. That is a big challenge and problem for most companies. And the second one is really, as we've seen this transition with, you know, MQLs dropping, and there's not a whole lot of high intent, hey, I want to buy, you know, hand raisers coming through. The nature of the pipeline has changed. And so how you handle somebody that says, I want to see a demo, I want pricing on this product, versus someone that, whether it was you, the AE, or the SDR has set up a meeting for you, that just says, hey, we find that, you know, CISOs are you know, really focused in this area. Does that sound familiar? Would you like to learn more? You have to handle those two discovery calls very, very differently. And many AEs are struggling with how to handle that outbound prospected discovery call. It's really different. You've got to really understand what their priorities and focus and their business needs are now, not jump in and just, well, let me show you a demo and go to feature and functionality. And because times have been so good over the last few years, AEs have to change all that. And they're struggling with that. And there's very low conversions with many teams from, and this is not necessarily an SDR problem, it could be, but from that first discovery meeting to the next step in the pipeline. And even from demos to the next step in the pipeline. And so we're working with a lot of companies, sales teams on what's going on with that and what is happening.
And is that, you know, some of the issues here, like they're not disqualifying bad deals, or are the AEs not doing a good job actually exciting the prospect who, you know, wasn't necessarily inbound and wanting to keep them motivated to keep going? Like, what are some of the tactics you guys are working with them on?
Yeah, it's a lot more about, hey, you can't just go in and show up and throw up over them in a discovery call. And again, talk about feature and functionality. You got to talk about the business challenges that they've got. How high a priority is that? Is it something that, you know, and you've got to use, what happens if you stay status quo on this? Does it materially impact your business or not? Okay, what is materially going to impact your business? And figure out what that is that they're willing to solve today or in the short-term future that's going to move the needle for that business and that individual you're talking to. And that's a really different questioning and discussion in discovery that you have when somebody comes in and says, this is what we're looking for, show me what you got, kind of thing.
And that was one of our, you know, core thesis for rolling out this product line we have called True ROI, which are, you know, ROI studies done by an analyst firm. And some of the idea is that for SDRs or ramping AEs or junior AEs, there's a lot of nuance. And it is a long conversation. Like, it takes us a long time to write the report. It takes us a long time to just flip through it because there's just a lot of granularity. There's a lot that's inherent in it about what the product actually does, right? That you can't, you know, particularly if you only have a few minutes with somebody, you can't do all of the buildup. It's a real skill to like get to the ROI, right? Like, right. If I tried to figure out right now with you in 75 seconds, like, what's the ROI of working with the Bridge Group? Right? That's actually really hard to get that done.
Yeah.
Even though it worked, you guys have been around, yeah. You have great clients, it, you know, improves your revenue, da, da, da. It's hard, right?
It is hard.
You're an expert seller.
Yeah. And it depends on what the person's business challenge is as to what, you know, what your ROI is going to be. So, I mean, what we've really found with a lot of reps were like, I'm disqualifying this meeting because they don't have budget and they're not ready to buy in the next 3 months. No, you actually have to sell. You know, you have to keep working with them until you find what their biggest need is that you can solve that they're willing to spend some money on. And it's not a BANT qualification today. Nobody's got budget for anything. In today's, in this type of economic environment, you have to develop that case to show them this is a burning need. They may not know how to solve it, but they're willing to invest time and energy if they can find a solution for it. And then they'll find the money if it's a big enough problem for them. But if you're not that big enough problem, then no.
And kind of reading between the lines, it sounds like AEs might not be resilient or persistent enough for kind of today's world.
Yeah. I mean, I think we got really used to really easy times in selling. And we have to change that. It hasn't been easy for the last year. And if you're looking for that needle in the haystack, if you will, deal that says, hey, I've got $100K budget for your exact problem, your product, sell me. That doesn't exist. And so you actually have to sell today. And you have to understand what that means to sell today and how to find out what their need and their urgency is around that need, and then build the case as to why they should invest this money today and what they're going to get out of it. And that's not in a 30-minute discovery call.
And then in a, you know, from a Bridge Group perspective, are you training AEs on lines of questioning, creating urgency? Like, what, for someone listening to this, like, how do you get better at selling?
Yeah, so we are big in playbooks, whether they're for SDRs and prospecting or they're for AEs and moving it from a discovery call through the sales cycle. But having a documented, repeatable process for moving deals forward that is by buyer persona. If I'm talking to a CISO, I have a whole different challenges and buyer needs that that CISO typically has and the things that they're interested in versus a director of security or a director of operations. You have different ways of talking to those people about their needs that you need to understand and be able to do. So it's not having a generic one size fits all that I'm going to talk to a CFO the same as I would talk to an accounts payable director if I'm selling an expense management package or whatever, right? So you have to be able to understand your buyers and have what are the questions, what am I trying to uncover from that buyer persona to ascertain what their level of pain is, what their level of need is, what's the biggest thing that they're dealing with at the company today that maps to what we do that we can bring relief to them today. And so documenting all of that, getting it all into a playbook that is for your existing team, but also new hires, which helps decrease that ramp time and get your new hires successful, and then train the reps. But also there's a lot of frontline management work that we're doing. We're realizing both in the sales world and the SDR world that the frontline managers are your make or break. And the challenge there is that most of your frontline managers are also your least experienced managers. They're typically going to be people that were an AE that you promoted to manager or an SDR that you promoted to manager and have never been given any training about what being a manager really means and what is the real importance of my job as a manager and where I can move the needle. They don't know how to coach. Many of them don't even know the difference between coaching and a one-on-one because they probably were never coached themselves, so they don't have anything as a role model or saying, okay, this is how my manager managed me that worked well, so I can just emulate what they're doing. And so there's this whole group of managers that we have now are really unprepared for the job and companies haven't set them up for success.
And then realistically, like, is one of the rationales to work with someone like the Bridge Group is that your directors and VPs just realistically are not going to make the time or have the skill set even to do that type of training?
Yes. And there's something different about having training coming from a third party versus your manager or director or, you know, or your VP. There's also something to be said. We bring experience from seeing a large multitude of different situations. Again, it's not a one size fits all playbook in anything. You have to know how to tweak, adapt every little moving part for your situation, your market, your buyers, your average deal size, the state of the market. Are you in a mature market? Are you evangelizing? Those all impact your sales and go-to-market program. And many VPs, many directors, heads of sales, CROs have only seen one or two models, and they're trying to bring in a lot of cases. Well, this is what I did at this company, and so I'm going to just install it here and it's going to work. And when it doesn't work, it's like, oh crap, what do I do now? Because again, you can't just install the model that you did at XYZ company and have it work at ABC, and it's going to work well. You need to be able to adjust, tweak, maybe even do something totally different. And a lot of leaders, managers haven't even seen what good looks like. So they don't even know what they're trying to adjust and tweak to. But this is why you know, if you're a smaller company, and we used to battle this all the time, I just want to hire somebody from Salesforce and have them be my VP of sales. Well, your Series A startup and Salesforce couldn't be any more different. And that's why so many of those fail, you know, so having that experience, the depth and breadth of seeing so many different situations and what has worked and what hasn't worked can help you eliminate a lot of false starts.
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, one thing we touched on earlier are these takes and viewpoints on outbound is dead. And very closely related is the SDR function is going away. Like, what's your response to that?
I think that's people just trying clickbait personally, or they don't know how to run a proper SDR outbound prospecting team. Yes, there are a lot of problems with outbound today. It does work when done right, and done right is the key. Sort of gets back to what we were just talking about, is a lot of these leaders don't know how to change things up based on what the current model and go-to-market strategy is that they're working with. They're trying to implement a model from somewhere else, or they were an SDR and now they've been made a manager and they have no idea what they're doing. And they get no help from the sales leader. They get no help from the marketing leader. They're left out on an island and are struggling. So it does work. You got to know how to do it right. You got to know how to adjust for the situation and your go-to-market model.
And so for outbound done right, like, what are some of the themes? Like, more customization, lower volume? Like, what are some of the patterns of what actually looks good?
Yeah. So it, again, it's really understanding what is, if you're an SDR team, really, what is my target market, and really narrowing that target market down, and my key buyer personas I'm going after, and understanding the messaging to them and what are their challenges. How do I mirror their challenges that they're going through today with the business value that we provide? And how do I mirror that message to, it's about them. It's not about us as the vendor. And it's not about offering a CFO a $25 Starbucks gift card. A CFO can pay for their own Starbucks. This is not going to move the needle for them, right? So, you know, you've got to really understand it. And, you know, I was just talking to one last week where they're doing some of the right things, but they're having their SDR team doing all the research about the contacts to add. And they're getting a lot of connects, but those connects are not leading to anything because they're not the right people. So you've got your SDRs wasting way too much time. Feed them who the right people are. Give them access to the right contacts, the right data, the right ICP. Don't leave it up to them to guess and judge. You're leaving it up to your most junior reps to figure that out. I don't know. To me, that doesn't make sense. You're leaving it up to your most junior reps to figure out messaging and how to reach out to these buyers when we don't train them on our buyers. We train them on our product and all about us. Makes no sense. You know, enable people properly so they can be successful. It changes the world.
That's great stuff. And in there, I really like the, it's not about us as like the vendor, right? It's such a simple point, but it's huge, right? It's like, what can you do for me? Like, I don't particularly care about like this random person who showed up in my inbox. Like I'm a business owner myself. Like, is this going to solve like a priority for me? Right.
Exactly.
I'm going to give you some money. I want to get something back.
Right. Right. You got to solve something that is, you know, keeping me up at night, you know, that is draining my pockets. And so it's about them. And, you know, there's a time and place to use customer stories. But if I outreach to you and reference another company, you know, the most likely response is, I don't care what you've done for other people. How are you going to help me? You know, certainly use customer stories once you're engaged in a two-way conversation. Those can be very powerful. When you've uncovered a common interest that they're willing to dive deep into, then use a customer story to back that up. But if you use a customer story, I mean, I get one. I mean, we're a small sales consulting firm. I get people trying to sell me security. I'm a chief sales officer. And they're saying, you know, we want to tell you how we helped out Microsoft solve their security problem. Number one, I don't have a security issue and I don't care about security. I'm in sales. And number two, I have absolutely nothing in common with Microsoft. Big delete.
Yeah.
You've lost all credibility with me. You know, or, hey, I see that you're a chief sales officer at the Bridge Group. I've done research. What kind of research is that? And then they go off and tell me about how great they are. No, no, you guys have totally missed the mark.
And it seems like AI will accelerate a lot of these problems. From what I've seen as of today, when, you know, you're in these various tools and we have some of the tools ourselves, right? Like the sample emails or like here cloud ratings, this is what we would suggest. You know, these are the emails we suggest you guys send, and they're horrible.
Yes.
Right? Because it's very programmatic and it's literally written by a robot.
Right. Right. Yes. If you don't feed AI the right information, you're going to get bad information back, right? So we've experimented with ChatGPT. If I feed it the right information and I say, here's the buyer I'm going after, here's what we do, map what that typical VP of infrastructure problems are that as this company can help them, I can get back some good information, but I've got to know how to write a good email to utilize that information. I think that AI can really help in a lot of research and make SDRs more productive. Same with AEs. But I don't see AI replacing sales reps or SDRs at this point. Maybe in the very low end average deal sizes, maybe in $1,000, maybe you can have one of these, you know, AI fake people on your website, you know, that might be able to walk them through some of the common questions or a straight out product demo that might happen. But at this point in time, you know, nobody's going to come and spend $100,000 from AI. Right? Maybe in 10 years, maybe as AI gets better. But, you know, right now, no, it's not a concern. Should you look at how to use AI and make yourself more effective? Absolutely. It can make you more productive. It can help pinpoint, you know, where are things falling apart in my process? You know, it can highlight this sales rep says they're closing this deal this month. And they haven't talked to them for 2 months. You know, big red flag, right? Are they really going to close this deal? Should you have high confidence in this deal being closed? Great stuff in support of what you're doing, but not replacement.
That makes perfect sense. AI is an enabler, not replacement. Well, look, this has been a great episode. Both great Q&A, great data, great slides. And we always like to do this, though, at the end is, again, have our guests just recap who their ICP is, how to work with you, what you do, because invariably a lot of people will come away from this impressed, or you've touched on an issue that they want help solving. And so who do you work with and how can they work with you?
Okay. So if you are, let's make this really direct since I'm in sales. If you are a sales and marketing leader at a B2B tech company, and have some issues in your go-to-market strategy, whether it be on the sales side, the SDR side, the account management side, the CSM side, revenue related, and you're not sure where to go with things, or just want to say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. Does that make sense? We're here for advice, to support you, bounce ideas off, brainstorm, or be your outsourced enablement arm and develop playbooks, develop trainings for your team, or do assessments and say, you know, here's where the real problem is, and here's what we recommend you do to fix it. You know, if you want that, that sometimes there's nothing better than getting an objective third party expert viewpoint, because even as a chief sales officer, a CRO, a CMO, you get so into the weeds after about 6 months on the job. You're so into the weeds, you're so into the way of doing things, and maybe some changes that you made, you're so bought into that's the way to go, that you can't stand back and see it objectively.
That makes sense.
And we can help do that.
And from a size perspective, whether revenue or funding, like what's the core
Series
range?
A on up. We've worked with them all. We've Perfect. Worked from, yeah, Series A funded to the IBMs, the Oracles, the SAPs of the world, and everything in between.
All right. Well, you've got a good total addressable market.
Yes.
Well, look, again, this episode has been phenomenal. I know a lot of people are going to get a lot of value out of it. Everyone listening, everyone watching, look in the links, look below in the show notes for both the slide report we went through and some other things we'll pick out from Bridge Group's library. They have other coverage for SDRs, just some other benchmarks that are just really, really good that we think the world should see more of.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Matt. And I appreciate what you guys at Cloud Ratings are doing in the market as well. And the perspective and the data you're providing is awesome.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.